This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. As Wisconsin and the rest of the nation gear up for the 2020 election season, many people are worried about the divisions from politics that are increasingly affecting neighbors, friends, or even families. Great Rivers United Way and several other organizations in La Crosse are hoping to mend those divisions by hosting a series of workshops to help people identify commonalities and learn how to engage in constructive conversation with people with whom they don't agree. Joining us to talk about the Better Angels program are Julie Nelson, Community Engagement Coordinator for Great Rivers United Way, Anthony Trigoski, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, Mary Nugent, President of the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area, and Sam Shinta, Chair of the La Crosse Chapter of Leader Ethics Wisconsin. Julie, can you just explain what Better Angels is and what their organization is trying to do?
I'll start from the beginning. Late last fall, I was reading a magazine article about political discourse and conversations that people were having to try and bring the community together. And it talked about a program called Better Angels. I thought, wow, that sounds really interesting. It sounds like something that United Way could do in the community. So I explored it a little bit more, and Better Angels is a citizens' movement to try and bring people together. So they are coming to town at our invitation. They don't charge us anything, and they bring some facilitators. They have different classes or workshops that they offer on ways that people can learn to talk with someone with whom they disagree politically and still come out friends in the end. So we're very excited to bring this to La Crosse. We think the time is ripe for it, and we think it's going to be some good conversation.
Why did you feel like this was something that the United Way could be a part of? I wonder if kind of the political realm is that something that you as an organization often kind of get into?
We try and stay out of the political realm for the most part. The main reason is because one of the things United Way does best is connect people. We see problems in our society, and we connect people and resources and try and find a solution to them. So this seemed like a natural thing of we can do this connecting. And then on another level, a lot of the issues that United Way tries to work with of poverty, homelessness, hunger, education, many of those decisions are made at a governmental level. So if we can't talk about these important issues without just being completely divided, we are never going to come together to solve some of these issues. So it's in the best interest of what United Way does and the community to get everyone talking in a positive way.
Mary, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about why the League of Women Voters in the La Crosse area wanted to get involved in this.
Well, for 100 years, we have been educating voters on issues and encouraging them to vote and to take an interest in their government. And we do it in a nonpartisan way, but we are very political because we believe that government is the way that we get things done. And so it's just natural because over the years, we've found that the civil discourse has created a divide where people take a word, say liberal, and use it in a derogatory way, and so it gives a slant to what is actually trying to be done. For example, the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin joined in with the lawsuit about the voter purge. And in a recent, let's say, the December 18th Milwaukee Sentinel, in the editorial describing the voter purge, it was labeled voter purge goes to federal court. It labeled the League of Women Voters as the liberal League of Women Voters. So immediately what happens is that it doesn't matter what side you are, if you're right or you're left, you're going to take a position on that liberal League of Women Voters. And you're going to take a position on the voter purge. Is it a right one or is it a left-leaning one? And what happens then is that people's biases get in the way of what the issue actually is. And like Juliet said, it doesn't lead to any solutions then because it's us against them. And as the League of Women Voters, we don't ever ask what political party you belong to when you join as a member. We never ask anybody at any time because we don't care. We work for all the people, for public issues such as, you know, climate change, gun safety. The big one right now is redistricting. We're trying to get all 50 states to join us in fair people maps, where the people, instead of the politicians, make up the political maps, and so the people actually have a voice. So I guess that's what the League of Women Voters wants, is to empower voters and to give everyone a voice and a place at the table.
Anthony, I wonder if you, I don't know, can maybe offer some context to some of the issues that Mary brought up of just the way that language around politics and divisions, perhaps the increasing polarization in politics, how that's shaping the way we're talking to each other about issues.
Well, Hope, polarization is at a relative high point right now in American history. We've gone through periods of high polarization before, strong partisanship before, and we're right back there again, where people are both becoming more politically divided in the positions that they have, and they're just becoming stronger partisans. Our political party is becoming more and more core to who we are, and our dislike of the other party is becoming more and more a part of our political attitudes. Politics is going to involve disagreement and conflict. That is inevitable. People don't agree about the proper role of government. People don't agree about who should pay for the things that the government does. Politics will necessarily involve disagreement. It will necessarily involve conflict. But where we get into trouble is when people call you a bad person instead of disagreeing with your ideas and trying to work together in good faith to come up with a solution that's acceptable to both sides. Right now, strong majorities of Americans are concerned about the lack of civility in American politics. They're concerned about the deep divisions between the two parties. And what people should be aware of, and what's so great about these workshops with Better Angels, is that there are concrete steps that people can take to deal with these problems, to try to improve their communities, because I do view incivility and hyperpartisanship as two of the central problems facing us today in American government and in the United States.
If there is, you know, a good percentage of people that are concerned about this, why does divisiveness continue to happen and to shape, you know, if people want to see a change, why is this still a problem, do you think, Anthony?
I think it's because the loudest voices tend to get the most attention. And given the media environment today on social media, cable news, the shout fest that you hear on the radio and on television and on the talk shows, the loudest voices, the nastiest voices often get the most attention. That's what gets the ratings. And so I think most people want to have constructive conversations, want to have civil discourse, but there's a certain segment out there that, you know, finds incivility to be their preferred method because they just simply do not like the other side. They think the other side has bad intentions. But we need to be aware that I think it's kind of like the silent majority almost. The silent majority would prefer a different type of politics, and it's just a matter of people being aware that our current state of deep partisanship, polarization, and incivility, it doesn't have to be that way. That changes can be made and that people can you know, express themselves and say that this is unacceptable and that changes need to be made.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're talking about how La Crosse area residents can mend political divisions through skills learned at two upcoming workshops. We're here with Anthony Chergosky, political science professor at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse, as well as Mary Nugent from the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area, Julie Nelson from Great Rivers United Way, and Sam Shinta from Leader Ethics Wisconsin. Sam, I know that this is an issue that Leader Ethics Wisconsin has been looking at this year. Can you talk a little bit about why your organization, why the local La Crosse chapter wanted to get involved in bringing in better angels?
Absolutely. Well, we're kind of a side sponsor here, but we're very excited about the fact that Better Angels is coming to town. As you know, our four core pillars for what we're expecting in terms of ethical leadership are that ethical leaders are honest, they are transparent, they represent all of their constituents, not just that core group that votes for them, and they are unifiers and not dividers. And so if you cue into those four pillars, the idea is that this is a grassroots movement to try and expect more ethical leadership from our leaders. Well, in order to coalesce and bring together people for that expectation, we've obviously got to bridge some of these political divides. And what we've found in talking with people on both the right and the left is, regardless of where they sit ideologically, the expectation is we want more ethical leadership in politics. We expect it in so many other of our areas. In fact, in so many professions, if you're an accountant, if you're an attorney, if you're a doctor or a nurse, you have this regular ethics training and ethics certification that you have to go through. We don't expect that with our politicians, which is quite amazing when you think about it, because talk about a profession that can impact more people than others. And so we started with this principle that, well, if we have this high level of expectation of ethical leadership of our political leaders, perhaps this is something that could also help bind us together. So we're obviously looking at it from the macro level, and the idea is that if we all can break down those boundaries, we can expect something more from our political leaders. We can ask for them to represent us better. At the end of the day, they can have their ideological differences. They can have their positions that will be different and oftentimes in conflict, as Anthony well points out. Politics is about conflict, but politics doesn't have to be about nasty conflict. It can be about conflict that can result ultimately in some sort of compromise and resolution. And by putting this ethical leadership principle up front, I think that we better position our political leaders, or the expectation is we can better position our political leaders to actually work toward those solutions.
Julie, I want to return to something that you mentioned earlier, that you feel like the time is ripe for this conversation in La Crosse. Why do you feel like the La Crosse area needs to have this conversation?
I think we have a good track record. That's one of the reasons that English Lutheran is on board as a sponsor. They've kind of set the standard of, we have community conversations, and they're not about religion, even though they are at a church, and they are well attended. So people are used to coming together and talking about these things. The Waking Up White series that's been going on at UWL, people are interested in these kind of topics, and they're showing up to talk about it. And as the others have said, the divide in politics is so huge right now that there's just a lot of people who would really like to find a better way, and we're ready to talk about it and see what we can do.
Yeah, Mary.
Part of that, to go along with that, we've had some demonstration on that. We've been working for the last 2 years on getting counties, county boards, and cities to adopt a Fair Maps referendum. And so far, we have La Crosse. We're working. Trempealeau has a referendum for the April elections. Monroe County will have a referendum. Vernon County passed it. And we're seeing across the state that more and more counties are passing these referendums, or are putting out these referendums, and they are passing, which to me shows that the majority of the people want to have fairness in their elections. And it doesn't, and so I think that people want to have the civil discourse. They want to be able to talk. They just don't know how.
So you feel that the redistricting issue is maybe representative of a desire within voters, within residents, to return to that civil
discourse.
Exactly,
because if you look at the issue in the legislature, it's a very partisan issue. But when you take it to the people, it's turning out to be a nonpartisan issue. They want these maps. It doesn't matter if they're Democrat or Republican, right or left. They want to have fairness in their government.
Sam, do you want to jump in on this?
Yes, and I think there are excellent points about talking about why La Crosse and why now. The community conversations, great evidence, the work that the league's doing. We should also recognize with Viterbo University and both their tradition of bringing communities together and their servant leadership program, obviously have been doing similar work for years and years in terms of trying to bridge some of these divides. And so it just seems like this is such a natural fit for something like this, that we have a hunger in this community. And I'm not saying that other communities don't, but I think we have a lot of specialness happening here in La Crosse that positions us very well to have people willing to look beyond those partisan divides and willing to work together in common cause regardless of the issues.
Yeah, Anthony, I wondered what your take was on this, because southwestern Wisconsin has traditionally been kind of considered a purple area of the state. And I wonder if you can kind of weigh in on that history and, you know, is it still considered purple now?
It is, Hope. When you look at the map of Wisconsin and how different areas vote, what you're seeing is that geographic areas in the state are moving in two different directions. You're seeing the urban areas become more solidly in the Democratic Party's camp. You're seeing the rural areas move sharply in the Republican Party's direction. And here we are in western Wisconsin, kind of in the middle. I think that puts us in a really important position. Maybe in western Wisconsin, we can be part of bridging the divide that we're seeing in Wisconsin between urban and rural, between Democrat and Republican. One more thing, Hope. There was a recent study that came out ranking state legislatures in terms of how polarized they are. How divided are the Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature? Wisconsin ranks 11th out of 50. Wisconsin has the 11th most polarized state legislature in the country. That means that we've got work to do in Wisconsin in terms of being able to bridge divides, in terms of being able to have disagreements and hash them out in a way that avoids constant conflict and constant gridlock.
Yeah, Sam, what do you think is the state of political discourse in the state of Wisconsin right now?
Well, in the state of Wisconsin, the United States, it's just not good. It's not healthy. And we're seeing statistics that bear that out. Pew just does a survey where they release looking at issues relating to the political divide. In 2017, they found that there was a 36-point gap between Republicans and Republican-leaning independents and Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents, which was up 15 points from 1994. So we're seeing the kind of average in terms of ideology moving farther apart. In the same survey, they asked people if you would be upset if your son or daughter married somebody from the other political party, and that number is at the highest level it has been in recent history. So we're seeing this manifesting in our lives. Now, I think we're somewhat buffered in western Wisconsin in that because it is more of a purple district, purple area, purple region, we are seeing that people do get along a lot better, that they actually work and compromise and find common cause. But step outside of this area into eastern Wisconsin, into Dane County, into the northern part of the state, and that divide becomes very, very apparent. And then go to other parts of the country. I remember I was back in New York City a few years back and spent Thanksgiving at the Upper West Side. And the whole mystery of the Midwest and the attitudes about, well, what are even red states and red people look like and talk like and think like was just amazing, that there was nobody at this entire event that even had that sort of connection. And it's because we allow ourselves to silo off, and certainly social media news allow that to be enhanced today. But yeah, it's just not healthy But I think, again, echoing what we're hearing here, we have the potential in Western Wisconsin to do something about that. We can serve as a model, given all of the wonderful community organizations and the track record we've got, and the fact that we just happen to be in this area that we do already work together and find ways around some of these divides.
Yeah, Mary, did you want to jump in on this?
Well, I, as you were speaking, I was thinking about family reunions, where it's gotten to the point, at least in my family, because we're pretty scattered, that you almost, before you go, have to check off a list. Okay, I'm not going to talk about education. I'm not going to talk about climate change. Oh, no. I'm not going to talk about gun safety. I'm not going to talk about the president. I'm not going to talk about, you know, and it's his limiting communication. Some of the topics that used to be so safe aren't safe anymore. And I don't know about any of you, but I've lost friends because of the political divide. I've lost communication with family members. And that makes me sad. And I think a program like Better Angels, I wish every single one of my relatives could come, because I think our family reunions would be much, much happier.
Yeah, Anthony.
Hope, if I could jump in, there's increasing political science research about how our political party identification is becoming core to our sense of who we are as a person. Now, it's one thing if our preferred political party just reflects our positions on what the world should be like and what policies we favor, and we can hash it out in an election, and then the election's over, and then we move on to the business of governing. But when our political party becomes core to who we are, then friendships break down and relationships break down, and we start to view the other side as not just people who we have good faith disagreements with, but as bad people and as people who threaten the country. And that's a really dangerous spot that we're in right now, where we, you know, it's not just that I'm a Democrat or a Republican because I tend to side with them. I'm a Democrat and I dislike the Republicans, or I'm a Republican and I think the Democrats are a threat. That's the point we're at right now, increasingly in the United States, and that's a real problem for us as a country.
Why do you think we've moved in that direction? What are the factors that have pushed us towards that?
Well, I think you look at the new media environment, Hope, where there is increasing vitriol in the media that really portrays the other side, not just as people who differ in policy, but as people who are bad people, but as people who have bad intentions. That's the message that people are getting from the shout fests on cable news and from the angry talk shows. People are getting the sense from political leaders as well, where political discourse among politicians has taken on a more angry tone. It's treating the other side as an existential threat rather than people who we just happen to have certain differences with. And so I think people are taking cues from what they see in the media and what they see from their leaders. And from what they see in the media and their leadership is that the other side, they're nasty people and we don't like them and they're dangerous. And I think at the grassroots level, it's increasingly important to fight back against that. That's where the change will happen, because lots of people are seeing a lot of benefit in pitting people against one another.
And there don't seem to be any consequences for that. Someone will give an extreme position and it just seems to empower them, so that emboldens everyone else. And even if you try to be more moderate, then you think, oh, that's not the way things are. I should be extreme too.
Yeah, Julie, I wanted to ask you, you know, we started to touch on this a little bit of the costs of these divisions. And I wondered what your perspective was on what divisiveness is costing us as a community, as a neighborhood, as, you know, a family at times.
You're right. There are so many issues that are important to everybody. Education, poverty, just, you know, the way you live in the community. And if one, you disagree with one side just because they're on that side, then you can never come together and say, where is it that we do agree? I had a discussion with someone on the other side with my stance on school choice. And, you know, at first we were very divided. And finally, you know, the person said, well, here's my bottom line position. It's like, okay, I still disagree with you, but I understand where you're coming from this bottom line. So now can we take this and maybe I can see a little bit of your point and you could see a little bit of mine and we'd never get what we really, really want, but could we get a little bit more of what each of us do? So yeah, I think it's instrumental to everything that we're doing as a community and it impacts us in many, many ways.
Julie Nelson is Community Engagement Coordinator for the Great Rivers United Way. She's here with us today to talk about political polarization and how it's impacting the La Crosse community and how a series of workshops could help residents mend those divisions. She's joined by Anthony Chergosky from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, Sam Shinta from Leader Ethics Wisconsin, and Mary Nugent from the League of Women Voters. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the upcoming Better Angels workshop. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Political polarization continues to spark conflict on social media and within communities. Several organizations in La Crosse are hoping to help residents mend those divisions through a series of workshops. Participants will learn how to have a constructive conversation with someone they don't agree with and how their own rhetoric could be making problems worse. Joining us to talk about why these skills are needed, especially ahead of the 2020 election, are Julie Nelson, Community Engagement Coordinator for Great Rivers United Way, Anthony Chergosky, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, Mary Nugent, President of the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area, and Sam Shinta, Chair of the La Crosse Chapter of Leader Ethics Wisconsin. Julie, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the two different workshops that are a part of this Better Angels program and kind of maybe briefly explain the goal of each one.
Yeah, we are bringing two workshops to La Crosse. Better Angels offers several, and we thought these would be the easiest to put together and the best fit for La Crosse. So the first one is Depolarizing Within, and it's geared toward taking a look at yourself. So my example is, I hate cats. So if I'm talking with you and you say, oh yeah, I hate the way cats jump on counters, and I hate the way cats knock all the decorations off your Christmas tree, we've got a good conversation going. But if you get to the point where you say, and all cat owners are stupid, that's where I need the tools to back off and say, well, you know, maybe not all the owners are stupid. I don't like cats. I'm still with you there, but let's not get that deep. So that's really about that, what that is, of looking at ourselves in a political realm and not piling on. We can still disagree, but let's acknowledge where our biases are and let's stop some of the extreme amount of that. We can fit a lot of people into that session. Doesn't matter how many reds, how many blues show up, so it is open to anyone of any political persuasion. So we have a lot of room in that one yet. And then the second one that's coming up in March is the skills training workshop. And that is getting a little bit more into how do you talk to someone else? Now we're looking outward a little bit more. What are some tools that you can have when you're conversing with someone who has a very different political view of finding the common ground, not resorting to all conservatives do this, all liberals do that, but where are we on the issues and where is the common ground? That one is a little more limited. We have room for 50 people, and so far we have 22 signed up. So that one will be more that outward thing, and there's not quite as much room there, so if you want to get in that one, sign up soon. Again, open to any number of reds or blues that want to show up. It's not a limit in that regard.
Yeah, Anthony, I want to return to this idea of looking inward when having some of these conversations and how conversation among like-minded people can actually lead to some of this polarization. Can you talk a little bit more about this and maybe how it relates to the points you brought up earlier of how our political identity or our political party has become more part of our identity?
Sure. Well, more and more we're seeing that people are simply not being exposed to other points of view, that they are convinced that their way of thinking about the world is the only valid way to think about the world, and anyone else must be just fundamentally misguided. Worse yet, they might be bad people with bad intentions. And that tends to get reinforced, Hope, because more and more people are just talking to people who agree with them. We see that on social media. We see that in the media more broadly. We've even seen examples of how people cluster in communities with like-minded people around them, that people just prefer to be around people who feel the same way about politics and other things that they do. The danger in that is that you get convinced that that's the only way of thinking about the world that could possibly make sense. And what people need to get to, and what Julie pointed out, is that instead of saying, well, people who disagree with me are morons and bad people, maybe they disagree with me and I don't share their views and I think about the world in a different way, but I still accept the possibility that they have good intentions, that they want what's best for the state and the country.
Sam, I just feel like what Anthony is describing, a lot of people might look at that and say, well, that's logical that, you know, people wouldn't extrapolate their feelings about an issue towards people. And I just wonder, I don't know, is it surprising that we've reached the point where a lot of people are unable or find it difficult to draw those lines?
And to be able to communicate?
Yeah.
It's not surprising. The kind of the flip side of the whole idea that we have this media landscape that acts as an amplifier is that we have a media landscape where you can also ensconce yourself wholly in that point of view. So when we were growing up, right, you had a media landscape where you took the news as the news, right? The news was presented and it was in a very limited formats were available. Today, you can find the news that appeals to your own internal biases, and you can wrap yourself in that comfortable blanket of that news source or set of news sources and not pay any attention to anything else that's going on in the rest of the world, which is just really quite a radical shift in the past 30, 40 years in American history. And so as a result, the incentive to actually connect with people from the other side isn't there. And yet, this is what we need now more than ever, is this ability to connect with people who think differently than us. To paraphrase, the actor Alan Alda had this wonderful quote, this notion that every time he meets someone, he goes in with this attitude that they're going to surprise him and challenge his thinking and maybe get him to think differently about something. And we've lost that humility in our lives, that we will be willing to interact with someone and be willing to say, well, maybe I don't have all the information, maybe I don't have all the answers, and maybe I can actually learn from somebody else with their different perspective. And our social and news world don't necessarily force us to do that anymore. But if we can force ourselves to do that, to first recognize where the problems are internally, and then to start breaking down the barriers externally, well, I think we've got a better set of communities around the world that we can actually move forward. And I know it sounds a bit Pollyannish, but why not dream big, right? Why not wish for that in our society?
You know, Julie, I feel like this brings me to a question that I had of, do you think that the people who maybe most need this training and most need to be confronted with some of these concepts, are they likely to come to these workshops?
That is certainly the perception that we all have. And it's the people of the other party that aren't going to come. My party's all going to come because we want to talk about this, but the other party is not. I think there are people that are very much entrenched and they feel comfortable in that. They have their tribe and they identify with that. And to branch out of that becomes scary to them. It's easier and more comforting to stay with what you know and the people that you do know. But we've got to start somewhere.
Mary, I want to turn to an issue that you'd have brought up during the break about how this political polarization, this people being kind of entrenched in their ideas, how that can maybe discourage some citizens from even wanting to participate in the political process.
We see that at, as Illegal Women Voters, we partner with many organizations to go out and do voter registration drives. And just this week, I was at one and talking to the people coming in and out, asking them if they have registered to vote. And it was interesting to hear the number of people saying, no, I don't want to vote. My voice doesn't count anyway. Why should I vote? I think that when there's such a divide that people start to feel hopeless. And what can they do? You know, they can't do anything anyway. Both sides are bad. My vote won't count. When we look at voter statistics of the number of people in our country who vote and the number of people in other countries that vote, it's sad because the fewer people who vote means that we are going to be governed by the minority and rather than the majority. So this is so important for people to feel like that they actually have meaning.
Yeah, and you brought up as well how that discouragement about the voting process, participating in politics, can bleed into other areas of government as well.
Correct.
How that might even impact the 2020 census.
Correct.
This year.
We were talking to some of the same people about, well, make sure that you participate in the census. It's really important, you know, for our county and for our city and for our state to be counted. And they were like, no, we're not going to do that. I don't want anybody to know. They're very suspicious of what the government will do with this information. And even when explained that this isn't going to come out for another 75 years, there's, you know, that it's, they're looking at numbers, they don't believe that. And so if you have too many people believing that the census doesn't count or that they're afraid of it, it's going to lead to, I'm sure you can explain how that works with the census and government and the number of representatives we have.
Yeah.
Funding.
Yeah, Anthony, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how just discouragement in not participating in voting, not participating in things like the census, what ripple effects that have for our government.
Well, Hope, a great predictor when you look at the predictors of who turns out to vote and who doesn't, a fantastic predictor of who does vote, a fantastic predictor of who does participate is how strongly aligned you are with your preferred political party, is how extreme you are on policy issues. It's the people on the extreme left and right. It's the people who are the strongest Democrats and the strongest Republicans who have the highest propensity to participate. what that leaves people is with the perception, you know, if I'm in the middle and, yeah, I've just, you know, just people on the extreme seem to dominate, well, what's the point? You know, my voice isn't going to be heard. A sense that you lack the effectiveness to participate in the political process. And that really leads to a distrust in government. You know, if you just feel like the government simply does not represent you, the people who are being nasty to each other and yelling at each other and the incivility, and you just don't feel like that's you, then you'll distrust the government. You may not fill out the census. You may not vote. And right now, we're at a real low point in America in terms of trust in government. Now, distrust in government is often the norm in the United States, but even so, when you look at the data, we're at a low point at, you know, kind of a place where we're already low in terms of trust in government. And that's a troubling place for us to be in, because now more than ever, we need citizen engagement and we need people to be participating in the process.
That's Anthony Chergosky from the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse here with us today to talk about a series of upcoming workshops in La Crosse to help residents have more constructive, non-polarizing political conversations. He's joined by Mary Nugent from the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area, Julie Nelson from Great Rivers United Way, and Sam Shinta from Leader Ethics Wisconsin. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Sam, I saw you wanted to jump in on that last point. I just wanted to offer that to you.
Sure. And I think what Anthony's hitting on is really important, because from the get-go, from our foundation, we've had a skepticism of government, and that's built into the American cake, and that's to be expected. What we have evolved to, though, is a cynicism about American government, and that's the danger. So skepticism, okay, healthy. You can have a healthy skepticism as a check on our federal government. But when it becomes cynical and when we can't trust each other or trust our leaders, the thing starts breaking down. And that's I think, the real danger today.
So how do we fight that as a community?
We agree to disagree, right? But we agree to also figure out what our common values, what our common principles are. What's astounding is even in this very polarized time, when you talk with Americans, you do hear this response of, well, there's more that we agree upon than we disagree upon. And so we've got to kind of figure out again, what are those things that we do agree upon as a foundational basis? And then recognize that the disagreements certainly are going to happen in terms of the how some of this policy filters through our ideological lens. But there's a lot that we share in common. We share a common sense of liberty. We share a common sense of equality. We share a common sense of, you know, believing that the next generation should be able to get ahead and carry on these principles that this country is based upon. And so let's recapture and refocus there and start building our conversations on those shared understandings. And then understand that if someone disagrees with you in terms of the way that we get from point A to point B, it's not because they're evil, it's just because they're different. It's just because they have a different opinion, and that is okay. If you're a critical thinker, obviously you're thinking deeply about problems, but you're also thinking empathetically. You're also recognizing that other points of view exist, and that it's okay for those other points of view to exist. It does not ruin your worldview if someone thinks differently than you do. But again, that takes a certain humility. It takes a certain responsible approach that I think we just have to get to as a society to combat the cynicism.
Yeah, Julie, I wonder how you hope, starting this conversation in the La Crosse area, you know, do you think it'll help move the needle on this issue?
Boy, it's hard to say, but you certainly hope so. If we get a small group of people together, will they go out and talk to their friends? As they talk to people across the political divide, can we have some amount of bringing together? And certainly if other people hear about this and they say, wow, I'd like to do this, we have a huge family reunion we'd like to bring in a group, or we have a church group, or we're in another community, if they want to contact me at United Way, I'll work with them. We'll see if we can get this conversation going even further. We can do some of the same things, and as I mentioned, there are other workshops that Better Angels offer, so we could go in a different direction even. So is it going to change the world? No. Is it going to start somewhere? Absolutely.
And I wonder if you could share a little bit more about what the Better Angels curriculum is based on. You know, where do they, I guess, find these principles to help people navigate these conversations?
It started kind of as a fluke of two people of a red and a blue getting together, and they just hated each other from the outset. But as they talked a little bit more, they realized the things that they have in common, and they actually became friends. So the more they thought about it, the more they thought more people need to be able to know how to have these conversations. So what can we do to provide them with some skills, some tools, some different ways of thinking, so that you can still have your point of view but not have to demonize the other people as a result? So it started in Ohio, and it's been moving across the country trying to bring this movement together and get more people involved.
I wonder if you could talk about community interest in the program so far. It sounds like at least the second workshop is already starting to fill up a little bit.
Yeah, both of them are. You organize something and your worst fear is like only six people are going to show up. And we're still a month away, and we have 32 people signed up for one of the workshops and 22 for the other. So this is a huge indicator that there is a lot of interest in this topic. And it would be wonderful if they filled up right away and there was such an interest that we said, okay, let's do it again another time and get more people involved. So yeah, if you're interested in signing up for one of these two, sign up early and make sure you have a seat.
Anthony, I wonder how you think the fact that 2020 is an election year, how is that going to impact these conversations?
It makes these conversations much more difficult, because in elections nowadays, what the kind of the key strategy is to disqualify your opponent. I mean, that's what we saw in the 2016 presidential election. Get people to hate Trump more than they hate Clinton. Get people to hate Clinton more than they hate Trump. It was a race to the bottom in terms of getting people to just despise the other candidate enough so that they could hold their nose and pull the lever for a particular candidate. I would hope that we can kind of resist that, and it's coming, because nowadays with a highly polarized environment, the key strategy that is being used in many campaigns is to turn out the base, fire up the core supporters of your political party, throw them the red meat, and not appeal to the people in the center, the people who aren't as committed to one side or the other. That makes it more urgent than ever to have conversations about how to bridge the political divide and how to resist those kinds of appeals to the base that are just about how awful the other side is and not making a constructive argument for your side.
Yeah, Mary, I wonder what your thoughts are on this, too, of how this being an election year kind of impacts these conversations, as well as perhaps how we get people to care about these conversations on a non-election year.
You know, the best outcome in an ideal world, people wouldn't be looking at party as they would instead pick the best candidate, regardless of the party, and regardless and pick the ones that they feel will do what is right and not what a party line is. That would be in an ideal world. And so I'm hoping that these conversations will get us started towards that. Start us seeing people as people rather than a political party or a right or a left, red or a blue. I think once we start getting that divide, shrinking it a little bit, people will want to be more involved. We have a world right now that it is so important for us to be involved. We have so many drastic decisions that need to be made in the next 10, 15 years that will affect everyone. It will affect our lives, our life. And if we can't work to solve these things, I hate to say what it's going to be like in a few more years. So League of Women Voters says get out and vote and talk to everybody and try to reach commonality. With consensus is what's made this country work.
Julie, what would you say to someone who is perhaps nervous about attending one of these workshops because they have been burned by facing someone of the opposite political persuasion?
I guess what I would say is the Better Angels facilitators are well trained in this. So they've come into a lot of situations where it might be easy for someone to get up on a soapbox and start talking in a very disrespectful manner. And they have the tools. They know how to shut that down right away and make everyone feel safe. So this is an environment where the facilitators are trained and they know what they're doing, and you can come in and feel safe about what you have to say and the way you feel.
Julie Nelson, Community Engagement Coordinator for Great Rivers United Way, Mary Nugent, President of the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area, Anthony Trigoski, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Sam Shinta, Chair of the La Crosse Chapter of Leader Ethics Wisconsin. Join us to talk about two Better Angels workshops coming up to help residents learn to mend political divisions ahead of the 2020 election. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Our show's produced by senior news editor and producer John Davis. If you missed part of today's program, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find a link to more information about the Better Angels workshops. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.